Welcome to Conservation Today. I am your host, Frances Etherington. Today we are talking with Carol Van Strom. Carol has been active for over 45 years fighting aerial application of pesticides to forest clearcuts, starting with protecting her home and family on the Oregon coast back in the 70s. Carol is the author of two books, A Bitter Fog, about the fight against pesticides, and The Oreo File, an exciting fiction story. Carol was also featured in the PBS documentary, The People vs. Agent Orange. A link to those resources is in the podcast description below. Now, here is a conversation with Carol Van Strom. Welcome, Carol.
Thank you.
I understand that you're going to be giving a webinar this Wednesday talking about community rights, and I'm going to put the information on how to join that webinar in the podcast description. What are you going to be talking about?
Well, a number of things, but one of them touches very much on your situation, which is that timber companies put the onus on property owners and residents to avoid their poisons rather than them avoiding exposing you to them. And that's absolutely dead wrong. It should not happen that way. They should not be allowed to expose people without their informed consent. And you're definitely, if you don't consent to it, they shouldn't do it. It's as simple as that. And that was one of the arguments I made in my book, A Bitter Fog, was that none of us should have to face the consequences of large corporations doing this to us and without our consent. So I really sympathize with you.
I just talked about my situation where Roseburg Forest Products just sprayed 2,4-D and maybe atrazine, if they tell me what they sprayed, less than a mile away from my home. So that just happened to me 2 days ago.
And that is absolutely unacceptable. Those are poisons. They are poisons. The end of the word herbicide means kill. Like homicide, pesticide, herbicide, that means to kill something. And that's what they do. And they kill indiscriminately. And they kill plants, and they kill animals, and they kill people who are animals, and fish, and everything else. And that's what people don't realize. They put these fancy names on them, but they are poisons. And
so we're talking about the timber industry, who likes to go out with helicopters and spray these herbicides on their clear cuts. And a lot of times these clear cuts are near homes and people and drinking watersheds and fish.
Definitely, definitely. And of course, the stuff never stays where it's supposed to land. In fact, a lot of it just stays in the air. It's blown around by the propellers or whatever they're called on a helicopter. So the stuff just drifts all over the place and every little breeze takes it even farther. And you never know where it's going to land, but eventually it ends up in the water. And once it's in the water, it affects both anybody that drinks that water and everything that lives in it. And as a result, Oregon has one of the worst problems with water contamination in the nation because they allow the spraying of clear cuts, which it's truly an abomination. I don't know how else to put it.
And they do it for the purpose of trying to kill every living thing on their clear cut that doesn't make them money. They need to kill everything that they think will take the resources, sun and water, from their profit margin of conifer trees.
That's right. And the whole practice starts with clear cutting, which should also be totally banned. It should never exist. What they're doing is strip mining. They are strip mining a forest. And then they call this forest management, but it's not, because a forest is a huge, vast complex of different species, of different kinds of trees, different kinds of bushes, different kinds of mosses and lichens and all those things that live under the earth in the soil. And if you don't have those, you don't have a forest. You have a plantation. You might as well plant corn as plant conifers. And you know what? The conifers do very poorly on that sterilized environment. The Forest Service learned that quite a while ago, after even after their own foresters warned them back in the early 1970s, their own foresters warned them that killing off all the broadleaf trees, the alders, the maples, especially the alders, so they could grow their commercial conifers, their fir trees, would damage the fir trees, because especially the alders fix nitrogen in the soil, so they fertilize the fir trees, and they also control a root rot that kills the fir trees without the alders.
I didn't know that. That's interesting. Yes.
And after the Fire Service ignored their own silviculture guys and went ahead with these years of spraying everything from Agent Orange to atrazine and other things, guess what they discovered?
What?
They discovered their firs were dying, and they were running around trying to find people who could give them alder seedlings. Quick, please help. Save our fir trees.
Currently, the Forest Service and the BLM do not spray for commodity production. They use some herbicides for noxious weeds, roadside, things like that. But to regrow trees, what they call commodity production, the Forest Service and the BLM does not use these herbicides and pesticides like private timber industry. And I understand that you are a big reason why that is, why the federal government doesn't do this anymore.
Well, one of the main reasons, among other things, was we, and not just me, but a group of individuals plus some groups like NCAP sued the Forest Service. Originally, we sued them, people in our valley and in Deadwood sued the Forest Service for using basically Agent Orange on the forest here, which is a combination of 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T. And that's what they were using here, including some surplus Agent Orange that they came up with. Wonderful stuff. And we won that lawsuit initially.
What year?
That was in 1976 was when the judge ruled, or 77 actually.
Okay. No,
he ruled. But the weird thing is, you can't just sue the government and say you can't poison us. You have to sue them under something like the National Environmental Policy Act, that they didn't do an adequate environmental impact statement. And so that was what the judge ruled. They hadn't considered the effects on people who lived out here. And they didn't even discuss what happened to the people in Vietnam when they got sprayed with the same stuff. So he ordered that they couldn't do it until they produced an adequate environmental impact statement. Which their impact statements used to be like a quarter inch thick. It was just a bunch of maps showing where they were going to spray stuff. The next one they came out with was two volumes, each 2 inches thick. And they did have to go into all that detail about what happened in Vietnam and all the studies that had been done, including the studies the Forest Service had been hiding, showing dioxin forming, accumulating in the wildlife in the Siaslaw National Forest right here to amazingly high levels. And so they produced a so-called adequate environmental statement, but because of all the science that was going on that we brought to light, and that other groups also were putting pressure on the Forest Service, they stopped using 2,4,5-T at all. And in fact, the EPA eventually, because Dow Chemical and Monsanto and the other companies withdrew their registrations, they canceled the registration again because of what came to light in these various lawsuits. And then we didn't stop there, because in the course of researching what happened in that original lawsuit, I was contacted by a reporter in Canada. And he was just an agricultural reporter. You know, he reported on crop prices and that kind of thing. But something came across their ticker tape up there about agricultural chemicals and charges of fraud. And he was very curious. He'd never heard of such a thing. So he started doing some digging. And that's how, when he contacted us, because it turned out, I'm trying to shorten everything here, it turned out that all of the forestry use chemicals, all of them, that the Forest Service and other companies were using here, had been tested by the same company, and that pumped out all these fraudulent results, and they were used by the companies to register their chemicals with the EPA on the basis of what he had discovered. And I was currently at the time writing my book. I included the research in there too. The Forest Service, a subsequent lawsuit forbid the Forest Service and the BLM from using any of those chemicals unless they independently performed safety studies on them, which they couldn't afford to do.
Which chemicals were they forbidden from using?
Now it was 2,4-D. 2,4,5-T was already off. 2,4-D, atrazine, glyphosate, which is Roundup. I can't remember all the names of
that's good.
All the forestry use chemicals. So those chemicals, you'll love this. The reason they're still on the market is the EPA and the Canadian Health and Safety agency got together with all of the chemical manufacturers in a meeting. This is incredible. At the Howard Johnson Motor Inn in Arlington, Virginia. This is back in 1978, I think, or 76, somewhere right in there. The whole purpose of the meeting was to decide how they could keep all these things on the market if all the tests were fraudulent. Unbelievably, they had a court reporter at the meeting that kept minutes of, it's a very fat document. And that was what they agreed. They would agree to keep all these things on the market on conditional registrations until the companies could submit valid tests. And
you mean they use it until they can prove it's safe. They can use it before they prove it's safe.
Exactly. And it's incredible. It's incredible. And then as a further insult that happened a little bit later, EPA stopped even looking at the data in the scientific reports that the companies supposedly submitted showing the safety of these things. So the companies could just give summaries and say, oh, everything's okay.
And so they still use them today. The Environmental Protection Agency hasn't changed anything. Except for 2,4,5-T, they can use all that stuff today.
That's right.
Including atrazine, which I understand has been banned in the entire European Union. It's banned in a lot of different states also, but Oregon, right next to people. Oh, yeah. It's incredible that we have to live with this.
Oh, yeah. And not just people, we're talking like just first of all, they combine these things. So you, and there's no testing on what happens when they combine, say, atrazine and 2,4-D, or atrazine and glyphosate, or 2,4-D and glyphosate. There is no testing. The very little studies that have been done show that there's enormous synergism that happens when you combine these chemicals, and the effects are completely different and a whole lot worse. So they have no idea what they're doing. That's when they say it's safe, it isn't. It isn't. And just claiming that they're that they're registered with EPA is meaningless. It is meaningless because no one knows.
Especially if they haven't done studies on children or older people or immune-compromised people, they would act differently than the white 40-year-old male.
That's right. None of them are tested. None of their testing ever involves females, oddly enough. And yet they can say, oh, it doesn't affect reproduction. Excuse me. And now the people that are doing studies, there's a guy in Washington, I can't give you his name right off the bat, but one of the studies he's been doing is multi-generational effects of some of these chemicals, these very chemicals like 2,4-D and glyphosate. They are finding that the effects can continue from one generation to the next up to four generations. So you getting exposed, say you were a younger person and pregnant at the moment, your child's children's children's children could be strongly affected, especially their immune systems and things like cancer. So that's what we're doing to our environment. It is insane. It is insane.
I watched that movie that you were in. What's the name of it?
The People versus Agent Orange.
Yes, and I'm going to put a link to that movie in the description also.
Oh, good.
And they were showing in Vietnam, you know, four generations later, there were still a lot of birth defects.
That's right.
And you were, your home, at the time you were fighting this in the 70s, you lived in the middle of the Siuslaw National Forest. And so you got all the herbicide spraying from the National Forest at that time. And I understand that there were other women in your community who had miscarriages after the spray.
There were one woman had 14 miscarriages within the few years that they lived out here and the spraying was happening. And it wasn't until they moved away that she was able to carry a child. And there were other women that, in fact, that was one thing that no one ever really tracked, and I wish they had, was the number of women who had to have hysterectomies because of nonstop bleeding was... they know this is an effect of phenoxy herbicides like 2,4-D, that it causes that kind of bleeding in animals, and we're an animal. You can't deny that one.
And so they don't really do these studies on women when they could really impact women in a significant way.
That's right. They're not supposed to expose people on purpose in a study, right? But what the Forest Service and the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, did was they had an agreement. It was called the Forest Use Chemical Project. And I have never been able to get all the records from that because it was totally illegal. It was, Forest Service would spray chemicals and EPA would study the communities that were exposed and look at what kind of effects they found. In other words, we were guinea pigs.
And do we have the results of that study?
The only results I've ever found were under Freedom of Information, were studies showing how much dioxin was in some of the drinking water and other, mostly drinking water and soils around here. but we never got anything showing, you know, except for something called the ALSI study, which was a study of, it was of the number of miscarriages. They called them spontaneous abortions. We called them involuntary abortions that occurred in women in this area after they sprayed. And it was a staggering study, and it was horrifying. And EPA was so appalled by it that they never published it. They refused to allow the scientists to publish it. So the only people, the only place it, any record of it is published is by Oregon State University people who challenged it with a whole bunch of data that was totally falsified. So this is how they keep people from finding out.
And it's also, I found it incredible to learn that after the Vietnam War, when they stopped using 2,4,5-T in the Vietnam War, they had all these leftover barrels. And they had found it damaging in Vietnam, so they stopped it. And then they said, oh, let's just spray it in Oregon.
Well, it wasn't just Oregon. It was like Northern California. It was Idaho. It was Washington. It just happened to be that, well, first of all, the pioneer in the use of that stuff in forestry happened to be at Oregon State University, a guy named Michael Newton. And he actually obtained barrels of Agent Orange and used them right here in our neighborhood. Wrote articles in the forestry magazines just praising this stuff to the skies, how wonderful it was. It was going to just totally transform forestry. We're going to have, you know, I don't know, magic trees or something. But thanks to people like him, and he was, of course, working with Dow Chemical and other chemical companies to promote it, because their whole production of these chemicals was being used by the military. They built whole plants to produce it, and suddenly they couldn't use it anymore in Vietnam. Their plants were going to go idle. They couldn't, so they had to find a use for it here, and that was one of the major uses that they started promoting. They were promoting it to roadside, you know, road crews and transportation, like railroad rights of way, and they were promoting it in rice growing areas and in beef growing areas. They used it on the rangelands in Texas and Oklahoma, places where a lot of our beef is produced. And yeah, they were, and then of course later they were finding dioxin, strangely enough, in the beef. Oh, how surprising. Yeah, it's all about making money.
Now, I was so impressed when Lincoln County citizens voted to stop this aerial spraying. They said no. The majority of the citizens in Lincoln County on an initiative voted no, and they stopped the spraying. And suddenly the whole of Lincoln County, all the rural residents that lived amongst the forests, the industrial forest land, you know, they were suddenly safe. That was an incredible thing that happened there in Lincoln County. And you're familiar with that, right?
Oh, well, of course. Yeah. Yes. No, and it was a wonderful thing, but it didn't last. Because, in case you've never heard of it, there is something called ALEC, which is the American Legislative Exchange Council. Keep your eye on them. In all 50 states, they have bought and paid for legislators. And I'm literally, this is how they, it's an industry group, front group. And they get legislators to pass legislation that will prevent or preclude any local control over things like forestry spraying, fracking, and other environmental hazards, so that the state legislature's laws will only apply. And so that's what they did. For 2 years, residents of Lincoln County were free from all the industrial forest lands in Lincoln County that were being sprayed, and they were free from that. But industry did manage to convince the court that that their state law that they had passed in the state legislature precluded any local control.
Now, which state law was that?
Oh, there's, it's called the something farm and
forest. Oh yeah, the farm, right to farm and forest.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds so innocuous, right? Of course we have a right to farm, but no, that's not what it is. What it is a law that says that bans any local control over any impacts on our health and safety. And they managed to get these passed in all 50 states.
Wow, Carol. You know, we're going to take a little break. This is Conservation Today. We have been speaking with Carol Van Strom about aerial herbicide applications. We'll be right back after this. Okay, we're back. We're talking with Carol Van Strom about her work stopping aerial herbicide spraying in Oregon. You know, Carol, I always thought it was a trespass issue when their aerial spray and pesticides come onto my property. Aren't they trespassing? Can I see?
Yes,
not on their property. I'm not stopping them from doing stuff on their property. I want to stop their soil from landsliding onto my property. That's trespassing. And their air from blowing over on my property.
Oh, yeah. No, and chemical trespass is something people were able to sue under before Alec got in there and got the legislator to pass. I think it's the same law that just means you can't challenge them on that basis, that chemical trespass is not, doesn't qualify.
So what's the status now of the Lincoln County Citizens Initiative? Is it just dead? Did they just stomp it out? Or,
well, we appealed it to the state court, which is the county courthouse type thing. They overturned the ban, saying that the state law forbid it, and we appealed that to the state appellate court, and they just rubber stamped the original court. So now we don't know where to go from here. We'll see. I think we're still discussing options.
And what are some of those options? The Supreme.
Well, one is there's a state initiative that would essentially overturn that Right to Farm Act No, people have the right to protect their own health and safety on a local level. So that's, I don't know whether they can manage to pass that either. It's what you're up against is vast amounts of money. I mean, here's an example. Back in 78, the doctors in Lincoln County, every physician in Lincoln County got together, and they, because they were so appalled by the birth defects they were seeing, which they said most doctors in a lifetime never saw these kinds of birth defects, particularly birth defects on when it was babies born without a brain, born with what they call water on the brain, hydrocephaly, and another with spina bifida. The numbers they were seeing were defied belief, and they were really concerned and were fairly certain that it was the herbicides that were causing them. And so they got two measures on our county ballot. This was in 1978 or 80. I can't remember which year. Maybe it was 1980. They were very limited. I mean, they were so limited. One would just prevent them from spraying herbicides near bus stops, school bus stops, and around schools. And it was just limiting where they could spray. It didn't say no aerial spraying. You would have thought that we were, you know, challenging, I don't know, American democracy, who knows? The industry spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, literally, to defeat those two mild measures. We were getting stuff in the mail every day, these glossy things saying that if these measures passed, you could go to jail if you sprayed a dandelion. I mean, that's literally, that is what they were saying. And put the scare into the voters, and they didn't pass them. I mean, it was, you know, that, and that's what you're up against. We were up against something similar with this last measure on the aerial spraying. And I think the group here, the community rights group, spent $20,000. That was all we had, promoting those measures. Industry spent well over $100,000. Wow. And we still defeated them. Yeah. But but that's what you're up against. Anybody is in this country trying to buck a corporate issue. It's scary.
It's amazing that the doctors got together in the back in the late 70s. Uh-huh. Saw all these birth defects because, you know, the spraying was within the Forest Service at that time.
Right.
And, saw all these birth defects and they couldn't get anywhere with their revelation.
No, they did get the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, to come in and do a preliminary study but all the that was in 1980, and the 2,4,5-T had been, all use of it had been stopped by the Forest Service. So they only looked at the 2,4-D spraying, even though the same areas had previously been sprayed by 2,4,5-T as well. That was what no one realized was, some forester once told me every square inch of this Siaslaw National Forest had been sprayed multiple times with the ingredients of Agent Orange. And even the CDC, with their limited study looking only at 2,4-D use, found a 13-fold increase in neural tube birth defects in the areas where it was sprayed. And neural tube birth defects are basically brain and spinal cord.
And that wasn't enough to, like,
no, you know what? Again, they've got the same thing. Oregon has something called PARC, which is a laugh. It's the Pesticide Analytical Review Board. And any complaints go to them, and they are totally controlled by industry, the timber industry and the chemical industry. And they're goons. We call them nozzle heads at Oregon State University. And they met to review the CDC findings and agreed that, because what CDC wanted to do after this preliminary study was to come in and do a full-scale study and actually take samples and pin down what some of these causes really were. You know, was it just dioxin? Was it the chemical, the herbicides themselves? Was it something else? They agreed that no, Oregon wouldn't support such a study. So CDC couldn't go ahead with it. And that was the end of it.
I noticed, I think I read somewhere that the HODADS Tree Planting Cooperative went in on a lawsuit with you back in 1976.
Uh-huh.
What's interesting is that I joined HODADS as a tree planter.
Oh, that's wonderful.
In 1977. So I wasn't aware of this lawsuit with the HODADS before that, but I know us tree planters were always really concerned about working in units that had been sprayed with herbicides.
Absolutely.
So it also impacts all the the forestry workers out there. It's not just us next door landowners.
Oh, no, no, no. In fact, the forestry workers are probably at the most risk because they're out there, you know, in the dust that's churned up. They're digging in the soil. They're breathing the air. And they get everything on their clothing, on their skin, in their hair. I mean, no, it's horrifying. And just as you were, a lot of those Hodads were women and had some... So one of them I know, like, who developed Parkinson's disease at a very early age, soon after being a Hodad. And
then who knows, you know, you can't prove anything.
Exactly.
Especially since a lot of these impacts don't happen immediately afterwards. They happen years afterwards, and you just can't prove, tie it back.
No, you can't.
Exposure earlier, right.
Yeah. That's right. And that's why, you know, I mean, since you can't, you know, put a whole bunch of people in a cage and spray them and then measure everything, the only studies we have are these epidemiological studies, like the CDC one, like the ALSI study, that try to pin down, you know, what kinds of illness or defects occur, and then also look at what could possibly be causing it. And again, it's so hard because the, like, APA hid all the dioxins sampling that was done during the ALSI study. They hid it for 4 years until one of the scientists, who was actually one of the labs that was running those samples, didn't realize that EPA hadn't released them and told us about them. And if it hadn't been for that, no one would ever have known.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. And then you mentioned that much of the Sayosol National Forest had been sprayed with 2,4-5-T or D. Doesn't that stay in the soil for a long time? Do you know how long that sticks around, that we have to worry about it, since for how long?
Oh, we do need to worry about it. I mean, there's so much to worry about. How can you just pick one thing? But the basic dioxin molecule, according to the National Bureau of Standards has done these calculations, could last for 2 billion years.
2 billion years.
Yeah. So we're talking, EPA's own scientists equate it to plutonium, both in toxicity and longevity, how long it will last. And that's why it's the whole idea of using it, using anything containing it, of any chemical product that combines chlorine and hydrocarbons is going to produce dioxins when you heat it.
I wonder if they can also impact my groundwater, my well water.
Well, it can get into it. Certainly, well, there's a process by which those chemicals, which they call them lipophilic, they're fat loving. But so theoretically, they wouldn't be in the water, but they cling to soil particles, tiny particles, so that any silt that gets into your water can carry it, as well as, oh, say if there is an oil spill or a chemical spill, the solvents in those chemicals can carry it through the water as well. So it can get into your well. No place is really safe from it. Yeah, we are not being kind to this planet.
Or us, or people.
Right, or anybody.
Or animals, or wildlife, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And now, it's the same with the fluorocarbons that they're now finding as a result of Teflon. That's what they call forever chemicals. Well, that's what dioxin is for sure. And now they have those fluorine compounds that are the same things that go on forever.
Are you familiar with a change in aerial spraying regulation that just happened this year in 2022? It's called Senate Bill 1602.
Yes. setting a buffer zone around a school, around a water source, around anything is useless. The stuff drifts. They can't prevent that. It not only drifts, it evaporates off the soil and drifts further, and it gets into the water. It goes all over the place. They're trying to limit exposure when they should be preventing exposure. Right. Thing that shouldn't be regulated. It shouldn't exist. Regulating these chemicals is like regulating a serial killer and telling him, oh, it's okay if you just kill a few. The Supreme Court years ago actually gave chemical companies license to kill by saying it's okay to kill one in a million of the people exposed. And when you have 600,000 chemicals out there, there's more, but that's a small number. That's one in a million for every one of those chemicals for every time they're used. It's mass murder.
Especially, I understand, in the heat of the day after they spray in the afternoon, this stuff evaporates and starts floating around in the air again. Once That's it goes right. on the ground, it doesn't stay on the ground. It just floats around again in the air when it gets hot.
Oh, yeah. And then it settles again somewhere else. And the next day it warms up and it keeps going. Yeah, there was what was his name? Dr. Elam. He was a scientist. I forget. He worked for Exxon or one of those companies, but he was retired and he lived along the Alsea Highway. And he actually mapped where the damage happened after a particular spraying. And he went out and looked at things that were wilting. And he drew a map. And it was amazing because every night the stuff would settle somewhere else. And there would be a dead patch. And then in the morning, it would all vaporize. And the wind changed. It went another place. And he mapped it out. It was amazing.
Wow, that is amazing.
Yeah.
Well, you know what Senate Bill 1602 did for us this time is it now asked people who live within 1 mile of industrial forest land to register at the Oregon Department of Forestry website, FERNS. And so if there's going to be a spray operation within 1 mile of someone who's registered, like me, I registered, then you have to be given a 2-week notice that they're going to spray. Before, like last year, when we were just subscribed to that area, we were given a 1-year notice. We were given a notice the herbicide spraying was going to happen within the next year. A lot of good that did us, you know, and suddenly the helicopters would show up and start spraying above us. You know, that's happened to us. But this time, they gave us a 2-week notice that maybe sometime in the next 2 weeks or later, they might spray. So they gave us a 2-week notice in January. And 2 months later, we got the 24-hour notice. This comes in via email or text. So we got the 24-hour notice that they were going to spray. So that's different now that we actually got to go inside, take the clothes off the line, bring the children in, close the chickens in. With a 24-hour notice, that's the biggest change for us that 1602 did. The helicopters just don't suddenly show up and start spraying above us. Now, we at least got a 24-hour notice for what it's worth. But you're right. The impact is we still get sprayed. We still get this herbicide drifting around near us.
Well, and you have no idea how long it's going to be there. Right. They already sprayed it. So for the next year, for all you know, you're breathing it every breath you take. It's like, you know, and it's not just breathing it, you're eating it, you're drinking it, you know. And how is it that this country allows a corporation to put the onus on you to avoid?
Right.
I mean, to avoid this, you would have to move away.
It's my home. I can't move, yeah, you know.
Exactly. But that's what industry has managed to do in this country. They've gotten the laws written totally in their favor.
Well, thank you for all the work you've done on this, because you've really improved things. You've helped move it along for the federal agencies. because that is our public lands, it's a little easier to force them to do something. When it's private land, they feel as though it's their God-given right to manage private land any way they want. Doesn't matter if they trespass their impacts on all the neighboring people. So we have a ways to go for private land.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what I hope people will just fight tooth and nail for it, because it's really important. We're destroying the very things that keep us alive. We're destroying them. You know, we're poisoning our food supply, we're poisoning our water, all to make a buck for corporate industry. We're not benefiting from it.
How do we fix corporate greed?
I think it's long past time for corporate capital punishment. I mean, if they're going to do this kind of thing, and they claim and got the Supreme Court to agree that that they have rights under the Constitution as a person, they have constitutional rights. Well, they should have the same liabilities that we have. We're not allowed to go murder people. They shouldn't either.
Okay. Wednesday. What's going to happen on Wednesday? You are on a webinar. What is the webinar about?
Guess about the forests. And what they asked me to speak about partly was the rights of nature, which is to me the next step to curing at least some of the major problems that are going on, which is giving natural systems rights. And we give them to corporations. They can go to court, and they're not people. They're not a living thing. We need to give living things, actually not just living things, but living systems, the same rights they give corporations to defend themselves in court and against being damaged, especially being killed permanently. And I really believe that's, I'm not alone. You know, Justice Douglas said this years ago, 1972. He did a wonderful dissent in a Supreme Court case saying that, yes, the river should have rights, the forest should have rights, to protect the lives that all depend upon them. I think it's long past time we did that. And other countries, Peru just passed laws, and I can't remember if they put it in their constitution, but other countries like Ecuador, Bolivia, New Zealand, they have actually put it into their constitutions so that anybody can go into court and speak for the trees. They can be the Lorax, which to me is really important. I think it's the thing that might finally wake people up and realize what we're doing to the natural world. I mean, we can't live without air, we can't live without food, and we're destroying it in the name of profit. So we need to change that. And change the way people think. And that's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy, but I hope I live to see at least some of it happen.
Right. Nancy sent some information. I'm going to read this information that she sent here. This is the Wednesday webinar, Oregonians Love Trees.
Right.
Living in Oregon, home to 67 native tree species, I didn't know that, it is in our DNA to protect this resource that enhances our quality of life in so many ways. So it is probably no surprise to learn that Google says there are 714 environmental groups in our state, many of them focused on woodlands. This year, as we approach Earth Day, we want to move deeper into the forest and connect our activist hearts to a more mystical discussion about trees and forests, streams and rivers. We want to ask the question, what is it about the forest that makes you do what you do? And so our guests, the guests will be you, Carol, Andrew from Coast Range Association, David Tevet, who's from the Oregon
Community Rights.
Yeah, it should be interesting. I mean, I don't look on the forest with any mystical, I don't think it's mystical. I mean, it's just part of us. It's part of us.
Right.
And, you know, and it's, and everything that lives in us, and we're just part of it. I think, so maybe I hope things like this will make other people realize that. I don't know. I don't know what it's going to take to.
Yeah, it's hard to know. We've tried so many different ways so far. And you've really helped succeed with the federal lands. Now we've got a big mountain to climb with the private industrial forest lands, many of them Wall Street owned.
That's right.
Profit rules.
Yeah. And maybe that's also something that needs to change. There shouldn't be a way for people to make excess profits, I call it, from natural resources. I mean, we all, as far as we're part of them. I mean, I don't want to use the word ownership because I don't think that way. I don't think of owning land. I think of taking care of it, certainly, and loving it, but not owning it, even though I technically own land.
Yeah,
but I don't like to think that way because that's making the land a slave.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't want to think that way.
Well, Carol, I really appreciate you talking with us today. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, I hope it helped. I hope so. I really do. You know,
we'll all see you on Wednesday.
Okay. Thank you so much.
We have been talking with Carol Van Strom about her work stopping aerial herbicide spraying in Oregon. This is Conservation Today. I am your host, Frances Etherington, and we will be back sometime in the future.
Someone's job and pay. When will we understand? No one will have a job if we destroy this land. No, 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 no. Alive and what should not be. Someone plays with fire, but you know we're only building our own funeral pyre. How can we sit here intellectualizing when we know what's happening is wrong? Causing mass extinction while doctors use machines on human lives to prolong. If someone's playing God, deciding who should be alive and who should not. If someone plays with fire, but you know he's only building his own funeral pyre. Mind, I cannot see the sense of global suicide for the few who live in luxury. Perhaps it's up to you and I to save this world. We'll have to put up one hell of a good fight. A good fight. And we have a voice, and bodies that are strong as the mountain. Yes, we have a choice. Be part of the destruction or do something to defend the earth. Defend the earth. Do what you can, do what you can. but just do something to defend the earth. Defend the earth. Do what you can, do what you must, but just do something to defend the earth. Defend the earth. Do what you can, do what you must, but just do something to defend the earth. Defend the earth. Do what you can, do what you must, but just do something to defend the earth. Defend the earth.